Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1967. The album is Takeoffs and Put-Ons. The artist, George Carlin. My guest, Billy Merritt. Thank you for being here.
Hello, it's great to be here.
So, we've done this album before, as I discussed.
Yeah. I'm amazed that somebody else knows that album.
Somebody else knows it, right.
I thought it was my personal album.
Growing up, I thought I was the biggest Carlin fan, though, and I had never heard this. And then, of
really?
Course, yeah, then I run into Dan Pasternak, who is a very nice gentleman, but who is not one to not shame you for not knowing something.
So yeah,
he gave me a lot of shit for not hearing it, and then I listened to it, and it's so beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it really
is. You know what? To me, it feels like it's the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
And that's his first album, and it's not the George Carlin we know.
Sure.
You know, what we know is a little bit more about social commentary.
Definitely.
A lot more cuss words.
Yeah.
Here is his club comic routine,
mm-hmm.
you know. But his voices are so good.
Yeah.
And he's still kind of doing a little social commentary
mm-hmm.
that you can for the mid-60s.
Yeah, you know? I think so. And in terms of, like, again, you're right, there's no swears, but, like, he pushes the language maybe a little bit. I mean, is there, like, maybe a hell or a damn? I don't know. It's not that was totally unusual, but there's something very...
Oh, no, well, compared to his later routines of the seven words you cannot say.
Yeah, it's very, very, very tame. Let's see, I had it in my hand. Okay, so, we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
You grew up with... The re-release cover, which couldn't have been released too much later, I don't think.
I believe it was released, I looked it up, like 73.
73, okay.
And I got it at a used record shop early 70s.
Okay,
And it was the first album I ever bought as a kid.
That's awesome.
You know, I got into comedy albums. My mom gave me her old Bill Cosby albums,
mm-hmm.
and that's all I listened to.
Of course.
Okay, when I was seven, I was listening to... It's not okay to listen to Bill Cosby now, but at the time...
It's okay to talk about, for sure.
But what was funny is I always felt, that's my mom's comedy. I don't want to listen. I want my own comedy. So I went to a record store, and I picked this up at a used record shop. And it was the best.
Of course.
I love the sketches in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. The voices are probably the thing that stand out the most, right?
I think so, yeah. And I re-listened to it the other day, mm-hmm. and first of all, have it memorized. You know, as I'm listening to it, I know every word.
Love it.
And it has got to be 20, 30 years ago that I listened to it last. His voice is crisp. His impersonations are kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're great, but they're neat.
Yeah.
And also, his ability to come up with people's names. I teach that in a lot of my improv classes, like, give me names of people.
Yeah.
Give us names. And then you listen to them, it's like Congolia Breckenridge.
Oh, so
and was it Congolia and her sister Tondaleo?
That's right. Holy shit. Yeah, that's a solid skill. Even if it has been worked on, it doesn't matter. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's very polished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's more polished than his later stuff.
Right.
That's why I said it feels like a club comic routine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like his, it's not his tight 5, it's his tight 25 or whatever, clearly. And it all just flows together,
mm-hmm.
I think, except for Indian Sergeant, which feels like a totally separate piece.
Sure, yeah.
Everything seems like it's one set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so good.
So did you know Carlin before this at all?
I think I did on TV. Like,
mm, okay.
He was the first hippie comic that I remember seeing on TV.
Sure.
A guy with a beard and long hair.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the album, the version of the album I got, he has a beard and long
right,
hair.
Right.
And I figured, was the late 70s when I got it? And it's like, yeah, I'm going to listen to a hippie comic.
To
this. And he has a great piece about the hippie dippy weatherman.
Yes.
I think I saw that on TV, and that's what made me get that piece.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing, too, is like, obviously now we know that, you know, he was doing that bit as, so I guess it's probably a lot funnier if you're juxtaposed with a clean cut dude. But then I'm used to seeing him do it with the beard and stuff. So I wonder if that threw people off at all. If they're like, if they thought, they assumed that was closer to who Carlin really was. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
It's interesting.
You know? Because there was a lot of, like, instant judgment if you had long hair. So.
When I re-listened to it the other day, I listened to it imagining him in a short hair club comic with a tie and
mm-hmm.
suit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grew up, I listened to it imagining him in jeans with long hair.
Yeah.
And it has a totally different feel and vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare this to his later albums, when he gets more conceptual,
mm-hmm.
it's not a short, sharp shots. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Here's a joke, here's a joke, here's a joke. This is how quick we go.
Yeah.
But his bits like A Place to Put Your Stuff, Man. Mm-hmm. Or my favorite was football, comparing football to baseball.
Oh, God, so good. Yeah.
It's much more looser at that time, mm-hmm. a little bit more flow.
Yeah.
This is just really short, sharp, tight.
Mm-hmm. And it's I think one of the things we talked about, like, previously is that, you know, so much of it is, I think, just naturally going to be him making fun of media and playing with media.
Yeah,
like,
Just
because it was a thing. I mean, that was all you had.
Yeah.
Although I guess that's kind of all we have now, too. But, yes. You know, but he had, like, I'm assuming these are, like, hot takes on the DJ noise and DJ sound.
Well,
DJ
I was listening. Voice, that's what I was rethinking. It's great to re-listen to that album. Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking me so I could re-listen to it. It's like, yeah, he's really taken apart. Boy, he's taken apart AM radio.
Right, right.
Whereas now we're talking about Snapchat and Twitter mm-hmm. and all these other things.
Yeah.
It's like, I even thought, as a premise, what would George Carlin at that time do with what we have now?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember seeing one of his last concerts before he passed away
mm-hmm.
and how angry he became as he got older and bitter and with the politics and all that stuff. I kind of wonder, is that what happens when you're a social commentary comic? After 50 years, you just go, fuck this.
Right, right, right. I know, it does seem like a natural evolution.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I think, like, his final album, they all, the thing is, like, there's one thing at the core of these is always this, like, very sweet childish heart. I don't
care,
like, even at its angriest.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't grow up with, I grew up knowing the angry stuff existed and I actively ignored it. Because I loved Hippie Carlin.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
But every time I've re-listened to one, especially I have his last album. Like,
what's his last album?
It is called It's Bad For You.
And when did he put that out?
It was posthumous. That one that came out like maybe a few months after he passed.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. It's good. And it's really good. And I listened to it knowing full well, I know I'm going to have to listen to Angry Carlin. But it wasn't the same Angry Carlin.
Really?
And the heart was there.
Oh, that's great. I've got to listen to that.
I like it. Some people I know think it's uneven, but I personally really liked it. And it could be affected by the fact that he had just died.
Yeah.
But I loved it.
What do you think his best album is?
Well, the one that I grew up with was Class Clown.
I was just going to say, Class Clown.
That's the one for me. Like,
yeah,
when
yeah,
you're
yeah.
16 listening to this guy who you kind of look like, because I had beard and long hair at the time, so I'm just like, I was allowed to swear. I was allowed to swear, but this guy was celebrating it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
justifying it with like, these treatises on language. I'm like, you're God.
He was scandalous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yet, and like I said, to me, I'm like, oh, good, you know what? Thank you. You've given me material. If anybody ever tells me to stop swearing, I've got this in my quiver, you know?
Absolutely.
I think that was, again, for me, that was fucking seminal. It was huge for me.
Yeah, I think that was a good album. And it was a big change for me going from Takeoffs and Put-Ons to Class Clown.
Yeah.
It's like almost two different comedians for me.
Sure, yeah.
And it was like, I was fairly young at the time. It's like, all right, I have to grow up now.
when I heard it.
And he became more subversive at that time. You didn't see him as much on TV.
Yeah.
Or at least I didn't. Mm-hmm. Maybe I wasn't allowed to watch TV at that time.
Okay.
But, yeah.
No, I think you're right, though. And he was even trying to have a TV career, and that just somehow just didn't come together for him.
No.
Again, maybe because he was a danger in the FBI was well. After him, you know, that kind of shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's Lenny Bruce never had a TV career,
but
so...
When did Lenny Bruce... I was comparing to this album
mm-hmm.
to Lenny's albums. When did Lenny's...
Fuck.
Like, what year was that?
Good
Come
question.
Come on, you're the expert.
That's what everybody thinks when they do the show. And I'm like, no, you're here
to... I've come here to learn from you.
You're here to educate me, is what I try and tell people. And then they're like, afterwards, like, oh, I see, I get it now. But Lenny Bruce, did he... Oh God, we talked about this the other day. I want to say he died in 68. God,
so his subversive comedy was probably in 66. The mid-60s. 66?
66, that's
when he passed away?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really weird to me. I always think it's 68 for some reason.
Yeah.
Because, again, I assume that there was more of a crossover album-wise between him and Carlin, because they were buddies.
I did, too. That's what I thought. I thought this album is what before he was influenced by Lenny Bruce.
Right.
But maybe it was the next album.
It must have been. And if you listen to, I guess, the cleanest of Lenny Bruce's stuff, it's not dissimilar. Because many voices and things like that. And actually, the first time we did Lenny Bruce, who's Matt Besser, came on, and he was like, let's talk about Lenny Bruce. And same kind of situation is like, oh, I didn't realize that he had kind of a clean side or like a maybe yeah. gentle side. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. It's an interesting time for comedy. The 60s, oh, yeah. like if it's, it was an interesting time for the country.
Sure, sure.
But comedy is a good example of how it started to shift. Mm-hmm. You know, the early 50s, what the comedy was. I mean, for women in comics as well, there yeah. was no such thing until 60s, then mm-hmm. in the 70s, and then it kind of switched around.
Yeah, all we had was... I think I got one of her albums this weekend. Oh, damn it. I thought it was in here. No, there's a Sophie Tucker in here that I picked up. So we had Sophie Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
That was about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know.
Nichols and May.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So you first hear this. Is this a thing you bring up to your room and listen to on your own? Or is there a family yes. record player? Okay, all right.
No, that was my, my home by myself listening. I became a comedy nerd. Like I said, my mom gave me those. She had like 3 Bill Cosby albums. It's mm-hmm. like, here, shut up and listen to this.
Yeah, yeah.
And she actually gave them to me. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I own these records.
That's awesome.
And it really got me going into the comedy record world.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first musical album, and this is back when there were records, there were no CDs,
sure.
would be the Beatles' White Album.
Yeah.
And then I went back to comedy again with, was it Big Bamboo?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With the rolling paper. And I had no idea what... You have that?
Just got a copy of that this weekend, too. I already
with the rolling
it.
Paper?
There's no rolling paper in this one, but there is in the one that I have in my room.
Yeah.
My wife will not be happy that I bought a second copy of that. you know, every once in a while, like, maybe it's a better quality record.
Yeah, maybe.
Know?
It could yeah. be. And I think it's one of those... I didn't think I was going to do comedy or be a comedian.
Okay.
But listening to this album really got me going. Then the Steve Martin albums, and sure. that just exploded the world of...
Of course.
Album comedy, if you will. And then when I was 18, I didn't think I was going to be into comedy. I mean, I just always listened to it in my room, and by that time you're into music, you're doing teenage stuff.
Yeah.
I was trying to play football. I was a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
I could barely play football.
Uh-huh.
And then I think my senior year in high school, I came down with cancer. I had a football physical, and it was before going in to the hospital. I ended up going to the hospital for like 30 days for all this surgery.
Cool.
Just a major deal.
Yeah.
Full bill of health, clean and all that. Came out of there much better for it. But my mom said, before I had to go into the hospital for surgery, do you want something? And just out of nowhere, I said, I want to go get some albums.
Awesome.
And I remember the albums were... It was, I think it was George Carlin's Class Clown,
because okay.
I never owned it. Fire Sign Theater, I think National Lampoon.
Yeah.
And I think Comedy Isn't Pretty.
Oh, good.
Those I had recorded on a cassette tape,
mm-hmm.
and then I listened to those while I was in the hospital.
Holy shit.
And I would say that month in the hospital turned me from thinking I was going to play football to, fuck this.
Yeah, right. Of course it
really,
would.
And I was told that I couldn't listen to the albums because I was laughing too much and it was breaking my stitches.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit. I thought it was because you're disturbing everyone else.
No.
You're hurting yourself.
No, I had like, yeah, down the middle, I had a stomach surgery. And it's like, it was like,
Jesus.
You can't laugh. You can't do that. And that made me even go more than I will be a comedian.
Oh, my God.
So I really... As tacky as it sounds, I feel comedy got me through that time.
Oh, it's not tacky.
Yeah.
That's the best.
And it's like, and that was the start. I think Bill Cosby was the start.
Of course, it's
but
okay.
But my, it's okay.
It's okay.
I feel so guilty.
You didn't do anything.
Listening to Bill Cosby when I was 7.
Oh, right, right.
But this was the beginning of that,
yeah.
I think, take-offs and put-ons.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this is its own thing. And like you were talking about earlier, like, you can feel maybe a little bit of the subversiveness, a little bit.
Yes.
But then it becomes, I think, by Class Clown at least, an agenda.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like,
yeah.
a veiled agenda still. Because it's not like you should do this or think this, but it's
these beautiful essays. Yeah.
You know, this is not an essay album. You're right, it's a joke album. And then eventually becomes these kind of comedy philosophy essays that are just
And it's a mirror, just like comedy is a mirror of society.
Mm-hmm.
He's like mirroring AM radio at that time, yeah. I feel, and TV.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, I grew up with TV.
Of course.
My mom often says, it's like, I always hated that you watch TV so much, but now I get it. And it's like, I had to do this, mother. I had to watch all this TV.
That's so good.
And I felt that connection with, maybe it was George Carlin that made me watch more TV
mm-hmm.
to look for those parodies.
I get that.
But clearly, the TV he watched was not the TV I watched.
Sure.
You know, I was Partridge Family and Gilligan's Island and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Partridge Family album. That was the other
album.
I had a Partridge
Family
album.
That music was great, though.
Oh, it was.
Is it just music, though, on the album? Or did they ever have bits?
Okay. Oh, my God. I am in a flashback. I think it was the Partridge Family album that had a song called The Song of the Whales.
What the hell?
I think they were just singing about, listen to the song of the whales. And then they cut to... It's like, at the time,
oh, it's amazing.
That's not funny. No. That's like, oh,
right. I'm going,
what the fuck was I listening to?
Oh my God, I have to find that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to skip back a second. Do you know what the Fire Sign album was? I'm just curious.
I cannot remember now. I need to research that again, because I'm not a Fire Sign fanatic.
Sure.
I can see in your eyes you are.
You know what? I wasn't, though, when I started the podcast.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine is like, this means so much to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm invested. Tell me more.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm friends with one of the guys in Fire Sign.
Wow.
And, yeah, and like it was like I came a fanatic by necessity. But I will say, some of the shit still goes way over my head.
It went over my head at that time, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going into hospital. What the fuck is this?
right.
National Lampoon was dirty to me.
Yeah, and that's...
And it was like, you know, I think Animal House had just come out coming out.
Yeah. Do you know which National Lampoon album it was?
Oh, God. I can't remember.
Okay. There's a lot. There's a
So that means they don't stick to me. I mean, obviously, by that time... I'm fairly old, so I've lived through the Steve Martin phase, guy. I was there when it was going on. And I remember just being like old man comedy albums, like Wild and Crazy Guy's good, but you got to hear some early Bill Cosby. It's like, no, you don't. You just need to listen to, you know. And yeah, people must have talked about the Steve Martin albums.
Oh, yeah. But the most requested is probably, of all albums, is probably Let's Get Small.
Yeah,
which is okay, because it's in my top five at least.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah,
but that's when it became like comedy super albums.
Yeah.
You know, that's a totally different world than some of those earlier things. I remember, I don't know, not Nichols and May. Oh, I can't remember. I'm drawing a blank of some earlier stuff, which is more conversational.
Okay,
not 2000-year-old man.
Sure.
Oh, it'll come back to me.
Okay.
I really can't remember it. They came from Chicago. Well, forget it. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I didn't even ask you. So where are you originally from?
Grew up in Florida.
In Florida.
Florida. Let's see. Miami. I lived there until sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started listening to comedy records. Then I moved up to Gainesville, Florida. I'm a university brat.
Uh-huh.
So my parents were University of Miami, then we're University of Florida in Gainesville. The beauty of Gainesville and being a college town are the record shops.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, the used records and the old records. And you'd always go to the comedy section first.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd always be the smallest, nastiest section. I remember one place called Hide and Zeke's is where we go because the two owners were called David Hyde and something Zeke or whatever.
That's amazing.
I still have the guy who was at the counter, Bill Perry. We're Facebook friends.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, this has got to be 40 years ago. It's like, I hope Bill Perry likes this album as I put it up, because he was like, of Gainesville, he was the, you know, he must approve of your music in order for you to play it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I think that's when I got into Steve Martin would be in Gainesville.
Sure.
But my early years were definitely George Carlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a specific... Well, first of all, is there a track on here that you like the most? Is there, like, a bit on here that you like? Or a voice, or whatever?
Oh, man. I don't know. It's funny to listen to it with the years past.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love Indian Sergeant so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I feel mildly like,
Right.
That might not be the... in the time, it's okay, but
mm-hmm.
you with the beads, get out of line. Right. It's kind of like, oh, that's homophobic. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we're overly sensitive, but the time... His character, I could see, I could visualize. Sure. The premise is Indians must have had mid-level officers or an Indian sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
I even love his setup for that. Maybe even better, because you could literally visualize the piece.
Yeah, yeah.
But my favorite part is the women that he plays. Like you said, and that, again, re-listening to it, maybe I didn't know as a kid that I loved it, but I didn't even know that the two sisters were threaded throughout the album.
Right.
Of, turn that around again?
Yeah,
what's the name again? Congolea?
Mm-hmm.
And Tongue...
is it... Congolia and Tondaleo.
Tondaleo and Congolia.
Yeah, yeah.
Tondaleo and Congolia Breckenridge.
Throws you off.
And there's a thread of a story throughout the album where I think it's like, well, we were going to reconnect you with your long-lost sister, but you didn't get the answer right, so we sent her back. It's like, then you cut to Tondaleo later on.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite, I still remember this line. What's your name? Tondaleo Breckenridge. And I'm salty. I just remember that line. And it's like, these are lines that you remember for the rest of your life.
Of course.
I'm humming it again now.
Mm-hmm.
The AM radio thing. We got the old tunes, the new tunes, the great tunes, the blue tunes, the greatest music on earth. But we never play it.
It's so good.
Nobody knows what that is, but I'll sing that out of, and I just annoy people with it.
That's what this stuff is intended mm-hmm. for. It's like, that is, I mean, again, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but every time somebody says, I discovered blah, blah, it's always between 12 and 14. Almost
really?
Universally,
yeah.
That is the age, at least for dudes.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, this show has become something of a sausage fest unintentionally.
Yeah.
Trying to get more women, but it does seem to be the same age again.
It's not fair.
It's
but
not.
Now there's, I mean, this sounds horrible, but everybody's putting out an album now.
Sure.
And it allows, I mean, that's the beauty mm-hmm. of modern days, is we do have the technical ability
mm-hmm.
for all these comics to put out albums. So
yes.
There is comedy for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a perfect socialist world.
It really is. It really, at least
Emily,
in terms of comedy.
Yeah, Emily Maya Mills just put out an album,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I've not heard it.
It's brand new. I just saw it. She just posted it. So
okay.
I'm going to listen to it sometime this week.
Awesome.
I'll get back to you, tell you about it.
Please do.
Yeah.
The one thing I keep hoping for is like just a little more new vinyl, like this album,
mm-hmm.
Dan Telfer's album, which I won't shut up about Dan
yeah.
Telfer because he's a genius, should be on vinyl. I desperately want it on vinyl. He's a goddamn genius.
So why do you like vinyl over CDs?
I don't necessarily prefer it in terms of that, but it was a matter of like when I was originally doing the podcast, I knew that there were people out there, especially who were listening to podcasts, who'd probably never heard a vinyl comedy album.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's pick the stuff that I knew I grew up with. The first comedy album I ever heard was a cassette. It was a Billy Connolly cassette. But after that, my mom was like, here, take my vinyl. I'm like,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
And my greatest memories were listening to them on vinyl. Yeah, this is in the 90s, but I had the experience of a lot of people in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
I can't imagine not growing up listening to comedy on records.
Right. I know.
Because I guess you can... Just, I guess, the pops and the clicks
sure.
and switching over the albums, and it does feel like comedy sets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't go on for 60 minutes. It's like you
yeah.
go, here's a bit, here's a bit, here's a bit.
Yeah.
Flip the record.
Exactly.
You know, that's interesting.
And I made friends over comedy.
Yeah.
Sure, mostly cassettes, but this is shit that I can get on vinyl. Or
yeah.
blah, blah. It's just of a certain age, and it's not to judge any new comedy, of course. But
No.
I've actually given people a break and said, yeah, we can do CDs, but then eventually a friend of mine was like, you know, you really, and I'm like, oh, fuck, you're right. It took me a while. I sent this long screed back. I'm like, I disagree. And I'm like, no, I don't really disagree. You're kind of right. So since then, over
yeah.
the last couple of years, it's been strictly vinyl.
Yeah.
We've made some, like, Brian Regan released a vinyl version of an album, so we talked about it.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I'm like, I'm fine. If it's been, I think I found a vinyl of the Celebrity Deathmatch theme.
Oh, my God.
And a friend of mine who was on the show
yeah.
years ago, I'm like, well, come on the show and we'll talk about it because it's on vinyl and it's a weird... The only way we talked about Phil Hartman was he designed a bunch of vinyl comedy covers or vinyl covers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think when we opened it, it was a Poco album. So I'm like, hey, guys, we're obviously here to talk about Poco. But, you know, that was my excuse because I'll take any excuse to talk
wow,
about
Phil
Hartman.
Hartman, man. What an incredible
Jesus.
Talent.
Jesus. He's my hero.
Like, yeah.
He's my
yeah.
hero. We were lucky enough to have Vicki Lewis for that episode, and that was fucking phenomenal.
Amazing.
Oh,
amazing.
God. He also designed a Firesign cover. I should point
did he
that
really?
Out. I don't know if that's the only comedy one he did, but
yeah.
that's the only one I know
did
of.
Did you see his audition for SNL audition?
Amazing.
It's just so...
It's amazing. It's upsettingly good.
Yeah. It disturbs me that people... There are going to be people who don't realize his brilliance. And maybe we didn't realize his brilliance as he was
sure.
being brilliant in front of us.
And he's one of those, too, who weirdly, like, his influences... obviously felt right now in terms
yeah.
of like sitcoms and sitcom acting at least.
Yeah, yeah.
And I bet there are people who don't know who he was already.
Exactly.
Which is
yeah.
fucked to me.
Maybe I need to start lecturing people in class
really?
About that.
I mean, he died 18 years ago now.
That's amazing.
Right?
Oh,
98,
Jesus.
I think it was. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah. It's so fucked up.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that hit me. Him and Jack Lemmon were the two that like hit me
yeah.
the hardest.
Yeah, yeah.
Geniuses. Just
yeah, absolutely.
Actually, where did I put? I don't know where I put it, but I, oh, right up here. I just bought this online the other day because I had to. One of my favorite episodes of News Radio. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. We're just gonna get off on a tangent about Phil Hartman. We're gonna do his News Radio podcast soon. I should point that out to my audience.
Oh, good, so, awesome.
Even though you can't stream it anywhere, but you can buy the whole series for like $20 now.
Really?
Yes. They sell it as a big pack. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I find my references are being lost on my students. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't use MASH as a reference.
Yeah.
As a character.
A little hard, yeah.
Although I will yell at people for not watching these shows.
Of course.
You know.
Of course.
But I find myself not watching modern sitcoms, mm-hmm. you know. So maybe I need to get on ball.
It's hard, like, unless it's something that really suits you.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a lot that suits me.
Yeah, it really bums me out that a lot of people are referencing Big Bang Theory for their comedy elements. Yeah, and it's like, all right.
Well, you know, Bob Newhart's been on there. He gave them their thing.
Well, every time I go home to visit my mom, she's now in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Uh-huh.
By the way, she has grown into Florida, and she is now a retiree from Florida.
Okay, yeah.
It's just, like, very aggressive. Let's see what we're talking about. I was just saying, we just came back from Canada, my mom and I. And it's like, I had to tone her down a little bit because she says, we need to sit now. And it's like, Mom, this isn't West Palm. Okay, we're in Canada. I'm tired of people saying sorry to us all the time. I forgot. I lost my train
of thought. It's okay. I did too. And I'm the interviewer. I'm supposed to bring you back on track. So let's just go back to George Carlin.
Okay.
Is there, and this is always one of these things that whenever I ask, it's kind of like a dead-end question, but I like to ask it anyway. Is there a specific influence, like, that you can feel of Carlin's on you?
Well, this album is influenced a lot of my, I'm looking at the set list right now, Wonderful Wino, the disc jockey thing, but his parody of, like commercials and daytime television and the newscast. The newscast was the biggie.
Yeah.
And I think I saw that set on online somewhere.
Oh, really?
I want to say it was an old Johnny Carson.
Okay.
But I don't even think Johnny would have had him on to do that.
Yeah, maybe.
But that was with the Hippy Dippy Weatherman.
Sure.
And I could start to see premise at a very early age.
Okay.
Premise being, you know, this is the what if the weatherman were a hippie? Yeah, how would he do the weather? The sportscast. Biff Burns with sports. I still remember the jokes. We have a partial score, 37. It's like, so simple, so stupid.
Brilliant.
But I'm sure I do it on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I've done those bits on stage.
Right.
The thing that affected me is it's very simple and very funny, but then he'll throw in a few things, like the hippy-dippy weatherman bringing you the hippy-dippy weatherman. And it's like, oh, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
If we see on the radar, we see a cold front coming in and a couple Russian ICBMs, so I wouldn't sweat it. It's like, wow. He's talking about the death of the world in 1967.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the Cold War fanaticism or whatever.
Right.
And he just did it casually. Simple, stupid comedy, but with, you know, hard, searing, you know, right. By the way, we're all going to die soon.
I mean, that is true. Like, that wasn't, again, that wasn't a thing.
No.
People weren't doing that. Like, not just, like, you could hint at it and be cute about it. But that wasn't as cute. That's like, no. This is imminent death. Here's my joke about imminent death.
Yeah.
And that's, it's gorgeous.
And that's definitely affected my comedy, you know,
yeah.
in a sense of, whereas Steve Martin is just nonsensical, crazy, which I absolutely loved,
sure.
you know, that organic, I call it pirate-like comedy, no logic to it, just do it and enjoy it. Whereas this is like kind of well thought out, yet still stupid,
right.
you know, stupid's not the right word, simplistic,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
When I teach, I try to say, keep your comedy simple, make your specifics hard.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
that's what works. That's what people will remember.
Right.
Nobody remember the joke. People remember the specifics of the joke.
That's true, huh?
You know. So, like, the ICBMs, well, I'll remember that specific.
Yeah.
Because I can see visually, and that's the thing about comedy vinyl,
mm-hmm.
is you see the comedy. You get to interpret the comedy in your ears or in your mind.
Yeah. In 2012, Stolen Dress Entertainment brought you the feature-length mockumentary Looking Forward, the story of one 24-year-old man's presidential campaign, 12 years in advance of eligibility, and 16 years in advance of a good slogan. Now, in 2016, in anticipation of an historic election season, Stolen Dress Entertainment brings you the sequel, Looking Forward, 2016. For the next 9 months, 14 of the story's central characters will present video blogs, bringing you their side of the story. On the day following the election in November, the strangest, most unorthodox film sequel in history will be completed. Visit lookingforwardmovie.com to see every video as it is posted and to watch the original film for free. Subscribe to the channels you like, retweet the characters, and share your thoughts on the Looking Forward page on Facebook. Looking Forward 2016. One campaign in pieces.
I just downloaded an Audible account, and I'm finding it, I'm really trying to concentrate listening to books, and it's like, I got it because I thought, well, I could do this while listening
and
to that.
At the same time, right.
You cannot, you know. And comedy albums, music albums, you can do anything while listening to it, but comedy albums, you just sit there and you see the comedy in your mind's eye, you know, and that's what specifics do for you.
You know, it's a good point. Not just a good point, it's great that this has come up twice in the same week.
Yeah.
I just interviewed Aileen Brosh McKenna. Again, these are going to come out all in weird different times, but who's the co-creator of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what she was talking about. We're talking about Fiddler on the Roof, and she was like,
Comedy album, Fiddler on the Roof?
Right, yeah.
Sure.
Well, and we were talking about, they're just, the specifics are what make that, when it is funny, funny.
Yes.
And what make it work, because it a bunch of goy related to this album about Jews.
Yeah.
And that it also reminds me that a lot of the comedy that you grew up listening to, you might not necessarily get.
Yeah.
But the more specific it is, you're going to laugh because you can feel that you're supposed to, number one, especially if there's an audience. And then two, those specifics might make you laugh just because of how they sound or what they sort of like put in your brain, if you don't know what an ICBM is as a kid.
But also, the first time I heard it, I didn't know what that was.
Right.
But I'd heard the audience laugh, so I knew that was funny.
100%.
But by listening to it over and over and over, and asking, hey, Mom, what's an ICBM?
Right.
It's like, what are you listening to? And it's actually teaching you. The specifics are making you go out and find out what those things are.
Right.
Nowadays, it's so easy. You Google everything.
Of course, but
at the time you had to look it up. Yeah. In my day, we had to look it up in an encyclopedia.
I think Google might be one of the reasons it will help some of the even older albums in this like survive. I keep wanting to flip through this pile that I got at the library yesterday. $3 for this crate, by the way.
Oh my god!
And most of this is comedy. Yeah, most
of this. Serious?
Yeah. They're just giving shit away. I got some Martin Mull, but okay. So here's the
Martin Mull.
Here's the one that I was having trouble getting through. I know who George Jessel is, okay, and I know
that's
most of his
old
comedy.
School.
That is really old school, and this is him as an old man. But even at this time, it's also like so poorly edited and canned laughter. But like it's one of those things where I'm not gonna get most of it. If there's a reference, I'd have to do a lot of research.
What did George Jessel do on TV? I remember seeing him.
As far as TV, I don't know. I just know most of his vaudeville stuff was stories, and his most famous joke was, Mommy, it's me, Georgie from The Money. Like, that was it. That's his big famous joke. And then, of course, he becomes Zoidberg on Futurama, and then everybody knows the best.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
thank you, Billy West, for keeping that shit alive.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's the kind of thing where, those little specifics are helpful if you have an avenue to find them out.
Absolutely. That's why I tell people, go research comedy. Because, more than likely, the comedy you're doing now has been done somewhere before.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Sure.
That's why I say simple comedy has been there forever.
Yeah.
Burns and Allen has been the best straight man, crazy man ever.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see versions of that throughout the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
The specifics change. The comedy doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's different.
Burns and Allen, that's a really good example, too, because I discovered, because I've been doing this fake presidential campaign for about 12 years. Don't stand on my record, kitty cat. I love you so. It's okay. Been doing this fake presidential campaign, and I think one of the first to ever do it was Gracie. Gracie did a fake presidential campaign and wrote a book about it.
Did she really?
Yeah, like in terms of at least the joke was, I wrote this book and this is what I'm going to do for the country.
Yeah.
And, her character was, she's a dumbass. So perfect. But she's one of the earliest to do it. And it's like, there is nothing new in terms of parallel thinking will exist forever, even if it's not in an exact parallel.
Absolutely.
And I think people get afraid of that. People get afraid that they're going to be called a joke stealer.
Yeah. I think you could take this George Carlin album, The Wonderful Wino.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I feel that's, trademark. It's my idea now.
Okay.
I'm going to do George Carlin's set, but Up It. Wonderful Wino, or no, Wino Radio would be what now? Spotify or
100%
Pandora or something like that. Serial or something. daytime television has definitely changed our version of that.
Yeah.
The politically correct Indian Sergeant.
Yes, right. Know, that's so true.
Yeah, it's like an analogous version of his comedy. It moves along with us.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No.
There's something I've been thinking about for a long time, and then it's come up on other podcasts I've listened to.
Yeah.
Or with other people. The idea of, I'm curious what you think about this as a teacher, the idea of covering somebody, covering, not stealing, covering consciously somebody else's work.
Yeah.
As a comedian.
Yeah.
Because Greg Fitzsimmons has been doing that with Cosby. They, like, take the material back. He's been performing Cosby jokes on stage.
Seriously?
Yes, and I'm like, that's the only way to do it.
Is he telling people, or is he just
I don't know.
It?
That's a question. He's going to do the podcast, so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah,
I'll find out.
I know, Greg,
but I just like the idea of, like, maybe even just doing a night where, hey, do your favorite Carlin bit, although we're all going to want to do seven words. But I'd be the one organizing
like
it.
Not me. Baseball.
There you go.
Baseball, football.
Dude, if you can do that, do you have that memorized? Because that's the thing. Like, that one's a rough one, but it's so beautiful that
I mentioned the word analogous version of that when I was writing some improv blog, talking about the difference between short form and long form improv comedy. You know, in short form, it's about short, sharp shot jokes. In long form, you just go, man. And it's like, as I wrote it out, I'm going, nobody's going to get this. And it's like, maybe three people got it. And it's like, good, I've reached three people.
That's hilarious. I love it.
That's what I mean. It's like, the comedy is simple, but you could stretch it out. I remember going on stage, and I first started doing comedy about 20 years ago in West Palm Beach with, I remember, Michael Delaney and I. Michael Delaney is a teacher, performer in New York, UCB, and we started together in West Palm. And the first time we ever got on stage, we were doing short form improv, and then we were stealing sketches from Second City Tour Co. And we didn't know it was right or wrong, but we got we didn't get caught. But this is like when we first started, and then we realized about a half year, and it's like, oh, we should write our own stuff. We just didn't have anything.
Yeah,
but we discovered, like, kids, high school kids who are coming to see us do our show, were stealing our stuff that we stole from somebody else.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then I overheard, what's her name, Rosie? Rosie O'Donnell. She said her first stand-up set was just basically someone else's set.
Oh, yeah, I think she stole Seinfeld or
something. She had no idea that you weren't supposed to do that.
She won a contest with it, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
So, in answer to that earlier question, if you tell people this is a salute to someone's comedy...
Yeah.
I would love to see, oh, that's a show.
Right?
Again, trademark, mine. I'm going to do
it. Damn
it,
he stole my idea. How'd you trademark it after I already suggested it? You're good at this.
You just got to yell trademark.
Shit.
That's how you keep things. I have so much stuff trademark.
It originally, honestly, started out with a ploy like, how can I get Steve Martin on my podcast? He hasn't done it. Why don't we do a tribute show? Like,
oh,
we'll just
brilliant.
Have people do bits, also read from his books. Like,
you should do that. I'll give it back to you.
Okay, yay!
Put
trademark.
The show up, woohoo! And then I'll come out and do someone's bit. That'd I love that
wouldn't
idea.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Like, it's you'd get to interpret it. I think you'd be free to interpret it however you want.
Yeah, I would do Indian Sergeant. I love that character.
Yeah.
I see that character, yeah.
My problem is I would be doing an impression. There would be no way. It would just be like, how much can I sound like Carlin would be my thing, and I don't.
Well, I think that's what would be neat about the show is, like, let's conceive a show right now.
Yep.
You get five or six of your favorite comics, and they do sets of their favorite comics, people that influence them, but they do it in their own style. Like, some people would do the exact thing with the exact impersonation of theirs, or they would do an updated version, or that'd maybe an analogous version.
It's true, right?
Or a song of it. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Like, I mean, if you left it out, it would be like Gallery 1988, how they do all these wonderful art shows dedicated to this. It would be doing the same thing, but like a stand-up version of it.
That's a great idea.
Sweet, let's do it. I'm cutting it out of this episode. Actually, I mentioned it on so many times before.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I feel like I'm feeling it out to get other comedy minds. Like, so is this a good idea?
No, it is a good idea. Pitch it. Pitch that show.
I love it.
Pitch it.
Okay, so this album leads directly to... So the next one you got was Class Clown? Or did you get other albums between this and Class Clown?
What was his... I can't remember his other albums.
I know it's hard.
Class Clown. I think Class Clown was the next one I got.
Yeah.
Why didn't I get other Bill Cosby... No, I mean... sorry. George Carlin albums.
I mean, it's hard to say. Eventually, he's on HBO. You don't necessarily.
What was the seven? What was that on?
That's on Class Clown.
That's on Class Clown. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get it because it was because my parents forbade me. That's why.
That's hilarious.
That's why I got it before when I got cancer. Can I have it now? So, that's why it took so long.
Holy shit.
To get that one, and I think after that I went straight into. Well, I went into. Which is hilarious because my parents didn't know Cheech and Chong, what their albums were like. So I got into Cheech and Chong.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Blues Brothers. Yes. That was the big change for me. The Blues Brothers album. I remember I was a kid when it came out in the movies,
mm-hmm.
and I went to watch and paid to watch that movie 8 times. So to me, that was my... And then Animal House was mm-hmm. the next album. So I guess it became more about music and comedy,
mm-hmm.
or musical comedy, I guess.
Sure.
Until I kind of Bill Cosby. God. Oh, Jesus. Steve Martin veered me back towards solid comedy albums. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. But,
Steve Martin's a guy who's hard to break down. Like, Carlin, I feel like you could pick this stuff apart, and it would make sense for a person like you with an analytical brain for comedy. Steve Martin is a lot harder, right? Like, it's because it's even figuring out what he's doing and why he's doing it.
It's if you use this in my classes, you dissect your comedy into left side of the brain, right side of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
To make it easier for comedians, I say pirate robot. the robot is the straight man of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The analytical, if this is what's funny, then the next logical step would be this and this. And mm-hmm. it's well written, planned out perfectly. I feel this album is very robotic in the sense of how he writes it.
Sure.
And has callbacks and stuff like that. The pirate is the comedian that just is funny and just finds some from their inner depth or id or whatever, just produces the comedy. And I think that's clearly what Steve Martin latched on to.
Yeah.
I think John Belushi clearly would be a good version of that too.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, his earlier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of how you divide between the two. And that's... We hadn't seen that before when Steve Martin came out. I think that's why he was so popular. I can't think of anybody else that was doing that kind of comedy.
Mm-mm.
The Jerk is a great example. I know it's not on vinyl, but it's on film.
There's got to be a vinyl soundtrack of it, though. And that's what I use as an excuse to talk about movies on the show. We've done it before.
Yes.
And it'll have... Perfect. We're going to do The Secret of My Success just because I found the soundtrack recently.
Yes, absolutely.
And a friend of mine loves it. I'm like, let's talk about it.
So. Yeah, yeah. I think he changed... that's such a cliche. He changed the comedy world by reaching into his id and just doing stupid ass comedy.
Yeah.
But look at who he is. He's, you know, he's a Renaissance man.
Oh, yeah.
He does all this great stuff. He's incredibly intelligent.
Yeah.
And I think his intelligence gave him the safety to be as stupid as he wanted to be.
I think that's
true.
On
stage.
You know, what's really great, though, too, is to read or listen to him. There's a companion album that came out too, and I'm sorry, it's either Let's Get Small or Wild and Crazy Guy.
Yeah.
A companion, you could buy these albums that were just an interview with the artist about how they made the album.
Really?
Hard to get.
Yeah.
A friend of mine has a few of them.
I'd never heard of that.
He puts them online, so I can point you to them. But like listening to him break down whichever album it is, it's like, oh, he's clearly exactly what you're saying, but then he's also like, if this bit doesn't work, like he's so fanatical about tweaking it just the right way. It's weird to me, because it doesn't feel... it feels like it's always pirate, like you say.
Yeah.
But there must be an underlying robot. I like pirate and robot a lot. That's fucking perfect.
Yeah. Well, the idea is figure out what you are.
Mm-hmm.
Solidify that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a robot, then damn it, I'm going to be the best robot I can be.
Yeah.
And that will allow you to become a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the same thing with the pirate. You know, because they both need each other.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity takes both. It doesn't take one. It takes both.
Pirate and Robot will have to be a movie or cartoon. I hope you're developing that. I would watch it.
On a book, actually.
Were you?
The full process, and nobody ever gets this right. I love hearing other people, like I've heard on several podcasts, tell me about Billy Merritt's Pirate and Robot and Ninja. And it's like, well, what is the ninja? Well, a ninja is when, and it's like, nope, that's not it. A ninja is when you've solidified your pirate and robot together,
mm-hmm.
and you can choose what you need at any time.
Yeah.
And basically, anybody who's done comedy for 10 years as a ninja.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been on stage enough, you've got your chops, you know, this scene needs a little bit of this, this mm-hmm. scene needs a little bit of that, and you kind of work the two together.
Yeah.
Which is neat, because you don't, in the old days, I grew up, like I said, one of my other favorite things is listening to comedy records, but I loved Martin and Lewis, Abbott and Costello.
Sure.
All these crazy man, straight man. Oh, Burns and Allen. Avery Schreiber.
Oh, yeah. And Jack Burns.
And Jack Burns.
Carlin's first partner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I have a Burns and Carlin album somewhere.
Avery Schreiber was on an improv group with... That's the album I was trying to think of before. Uh-oh. With Fred Willard.
Yeah.
They were in some comedy group, in a Chicago comedy group. Yeah. That's a whole other world. Is if we're talking about comedy influences as a teen or whatever. Blues Brothers, the movie, but Fernwood Tonight on good. PBS.
Mm-hmm.
I never got Mary Hartman, but Fernwood Tonight when it came on.
Mm-hmm.
And my PBS station had Mary Hartman, Fernwood Tonight, and Monty Python.
Oh, that's awesome.
And usually I'll tell people my main comedy influence would be Monty Python.
Sure.
And of course, I had the Monty Python albums. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. Now I get to... I'm reflecting back on where my comedy came from. I always said, without what are you thinking, oh, Monty Python. But it's like, no, it was that old school Martin and Lewis, the Crazy Man, Straight Man, because you had this and this, that pirate... Robot, the George Carlin albums, and Bill Cosby.
It's so hard. Yeah. It's so hard. People, when they're like, well, can't talk about that, but I would love to. And then they're like, well, or they'll suggest it. I'll be like, I'm happy to do it on the show.
Yeah.
However, just understand, we're going to have to talk about the hard shit.
That's the same thing with Woody Allen, too.
Yeah.
You know, his early albums, anything you ever want to do as far as comedy moves on stage, Woody Allen has done in his movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Purple Rose of Cairo, stepping out of a scene and stepping back into a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Zelig, morphing into one scene into the other. His very first, Tiger Lily, his first movie, is dubbing, on stage. His second is the class I teach right now, improvised documentary, Take the Money and Run.
That is one of my favorite movies of
all
time. I was
just about to say, it's like one of the top movies.
Genius, yeah.
Yeah, and, but now, you mention it in class, they're going, is our teacher a perv?
I know.
And it's like, but that's not what we're talking about.
That's a separate issue here.
Yeah.
I do this live show every month where it's called a drinking game where we do a stage reading of 80s or 90s movies. We drink audience drinks. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, nice.
And sometimes we get to like either riff or like throw in our own joke if something in the movie doesn't land or is boring.
Yeah.
And I try to throw in something about a gub and then everybody in the room in the rehearsal is like, what's that? I'm like, oh, fuck, never mind. None of you.
Well, gub, say it.
The gub bit in Take the Money and Run. Gub.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. See, it's that obscure though that like nobody, I'm like, my buddy Jeremy, who knows every joke I know, like, ha, ha, ha. I'm like, yeah, thank you, Jeremy, but nobody else knew what the fuck.
There's a correlation between George Carlin's early bits were very hard premise-based bits,
sure,
and Woody Allen's early movies were premise-based bits.
Definitely, yeah.
Take the Money and Run, Bananas, Sleeper were all, let's go to this joke, now let's get to this joke, let's get to this joke.
Mm-hmm.
Then once he starts talking about relationships with Annie Hall, that's when he perved. I'm going to go there. That's going to allow me to love his early movies and move on from there.
At least Annie Hall's of age in that movie.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah.
I guess we can give him that. Right?
You talk about 80s and 90s, you know what I just saw last night? And it's like, I have to tell everybody to watch it again, is Being There with Peter Sellers.
Fucking, I love that movie so
it
much.
It is. It's why movies are good. Mm-hmm. You know, I just rewatched that whole movie and just going, this is not a Being There podcast.
It's okay. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in love with Shirley MacLaine, so that's one way to watch it. But
underscored, it's all about Peter Sellers. No, it's her in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, because he's playing brilliantly, by the way. But if you're playing a simple character, the movie's got to be about more than just that simple character.
Well, here we go. We're going to talk about that movie. what made that movie great, and Peter Sellers is... Less is more with him. He did no acting. He just yes, I like to do that. And it's up to everybody else to make conclusions and evolve and change. And every character around him changes. And he just, that would be good.
He plays the only plot device in it. He plays like a pure blank slate.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So go watch Being There, everybody. Go watch that. Go watch Take the Money and Run. Underappreciated classic,
I
think. He makes a soap gun, and that's all I will say. He makes a gun out of soap and shoe polish, and it's funny.
Yeah, my favorite joke in that was he played cello in the marching band. And then a visual of it.
It's so goddamn good. Oh, Jesus, I need to rewatch that movie.
Yeah.
Is that out on Blu-ray?
Laserdisc.
Oh, fuck.
So
that helps
you
me.
Got that so you got a must have you must have Laserdisc in here somewhere.
I do. My buddy Taylor has one, so I'll just have to go to his place. Okay, so we're near the end of the episode. What would you recommend? Why recommend this album to people? Let's say they somehow have never heard Carlin or don't know early Carlin.
I think the first thing that pops in my head is it's a glimpse of a parody of the times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he basically was reflecting on the TV of the time, the music of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Indian Sergeant is, but everything else,
yeah.
The newscasts of the time. So it's a good glimpse into what was going on at that time, number one.
Yeah.
And then technically, how to be a comedian, you know,
yeah.
how his stuff is well written,
mm-hmm.
How you could tell he practiced his voices, and he, you know, yeah. count how many voices he does in this, just seamlessly,
yeah.
you know, without even thinking about it. It's like he could have been a voiceover. He probably was a voiceover artist.
He might have been.
But his ability to play so many characters so quickly,
mm-hmm.
technically. So
yeah.
the pirate side of this is just how much fun he's having on stage and playing the characters. But the robot side is just basically how he takes apart what we see every day on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and radio and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Plus, it's just funny.
It really is. It's so good.
You know?
I don't know when this is going to come out, so I apologize for that in advance. But do you have anything coming up? If you have something urgent, I can actually probably organize this to come out at the right time.
Oh, no, no.
But
On TV, I'll be on, there's a show coming up this summer called Another Period.
Okay.
On Comedy Central.
I love that show.
I played President Taft.
Yay! That's awesome.
I think I have a 3 or 2 episode arc, depending on how good I did. This is hilarious to me, because my last 3 things I've done, Taft, I just picked up, I'm doing a bit for a show, it'll probably be out at this time, as Teddy Roosevelt.
Really?
For Adam Ruins Everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a small bit,
okay.
but the fact that I'm playing, and then, in Trump versus Bernie, I play very quickly. I hope they cut it out, to be honest with you. Chris Christie being waterboarded with marinara sauce.
Oh,
so,
Jesus Christ.
One of the worst shoots I've ever done in my life.
No.
Thank you, Anthony Atamniak, for thinking of me. It was scary. I thought I was going to die.
I bet.
But that's what I'm doing on TV. But if you're in LA, on stage,
mm-hmm.
I'm with the Smokes every Monday night at 7,
mm-hmm.
At the UCB on Franklin,
mm-hmm.
And the Swarm once a month. That's old school. That's old comedy album uh-huh. night. That's me, Sean Conroy,
mm-hmm.
Andy Daly, Andy Secunda. Plus, we have people, guests, sit in with us.
Awesome.
Exciting and vibrant guests. And that's every first Saturday at 9 p.m. at the UCB Sunset.
Okay.
It's a once-a-month show. Very all exciting.
Right. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
God, that's
good. I got it all out.
What about Twitter? Twitter and all that.
Twitter, Billy Merritt
mm-hmm.
at Twitter. Oh, I have a podcast. Can I do podcasts?
Of course.
Very exciting and vibrant podcast mm-hmm. That you can pick up on iTunes called Make That Sandwich.
Uh-huh.
It's a game show where we make each other's dream sandwiches. And it sounds really simple, and it is. But that's the thing, is people come on the show, it's like, wait, let me get this right, we're just going to talk about sandwiches? It's like, no, it's only 45 minutes, so, and after the show, they're going, I got more. I know you do. We all have stuff to talk about.
Oh, it's the thing about podcasts, they are a lot like early TV or early
yes.
film. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Oh,
right,
that's
now.
What I feel,
I
would love
it.
To do
love
a black and white version of Make That Sandwich.
You should.
You know,
I'm doing a thing on my other podcast where we're going to do old timey episodes, but we're going to put it early in the stream and not really tell anybody about
it.
So
neat.
If you see there was an episode in 1885, you might look and then go click on it. And why is one of us murdering Alexander Graham Bell? Well, you'll find out. So yeah, I love the idea of old timey podcasts.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, you're welcome back. I would love to do another album.
I gotta go get. Well, has anybody done Big Bamboo? Of course.
Fuck. Wait, Big Bamboo. Hold on, though. Have they? Are you sure we've done it?
Done
Are you
stoners.
Sure we've done it though? Are you sure?
Because
we've done. Here's the thing. I would pick it myself, but I'm not the one who gets to pick the albums. Look, we probably have once,
yeah.
years ago. We've been around 5 years.
We'll
now.
Talk about it.
Of course.
It, yeah.
You guys also go because this will be relevant till November. Go to lookingforwardmovie.com. That is my political mockumentary where I am running for president still 12 years later.
Pat Paulson.
I love Pat Paulson.
Okay, sorry. I know we're ending the show.
No, it's okay. He's one of like my inspirations.
He's one of the original running for president
comedians.
Of course.
The best. Like, easily the best.
Yeah,
so go there. It's blog-based, but by sometime in 2017, it'll be a 90-minute mockumentary. So go to that. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl, Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl, and find everything else at ComedyOnVinyl.com.